This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. With another 60 minutes of old-time radio, this is the Relic Radio Show. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday. We'll start off this week with Gunsmoke, an episode from August 23rd, 1952, titled Shakespeare. Then it's A Quick Incredible But True with Heads Up. We'll finish off with The Columbia Workshop, an episode from March 2nd, 1946, titled Slim. We'll be hearing more from Columbia Workshop on Sunday's Strange Tales episode, but for now, we'll start off with Gunsmoke.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
It was the dust. The heat was bad enough in Dodge City, but out on the plain, it was the dust. The sun was a burning red-brown chip in the sky, and the sweat on a man never had a chance to drop. It was blotted and dried with dust. Doc Chester and I had ridden to Old Man Gore's place 10 miles out. He'd had some trouble with one of the hands. Fella had gone loco with liquor and had been shooting up the cattle. We found him, stripped naked nearby on his haunches, crying, drunk over a parched water hole. Doc had got him to bed and fixed him up some. And now we were heading back for Dodge.
Darn horse. Seems he's just bound to stomp all the dust and canvas in my eyes.
Maybe the marshal will buy you a camel, Chester.
This keeps up, we'll all buy camels. I remember the time back in Waco when I was just
Doc,
a small...
Chester,
boy.
You see something ahead on the side of the trail there?
Yeah, maybe.
It looks like some poor calf strayed off and dropped.
I don't think so. It looks like a man. Come on! Chester, get the water bag.
Yes, sir.
Let me have a look, Marshal.
Yeah.
Heat.
Is he all right?
Well, depends on how long he's been lying here.
Here you are, Mr. Dillon.
Open up his shirt, Marshal. Chester, get some of that water on his wrist.
All right.
It looks like an Easterner, huh?
Sure not dressed for this country. Oh, no, that's better. That's better. Try to get a few drops in him.
All right.
No, not too much, Chester.
Not in his nose, Chester. His mouth.
Well, my gracious, I'm sorry, Mr. Dillon, but he moved his head. It's not so easy to... Hey, look, he's awake.
You're all right, mister. Just take it easy for a bit now.
Oh, that this too, too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a Jew.
What did he say?
Oh, it's out of his head, Chester.
for this relief. Much thanks.
Forget it. Chester, get around the other side and shade him from the sun.
Yes, sir.
The sun. I begin to be a weary of the sun.
I don't blame you. What happened?
My wagon shed a wheel, I fear, along the high road. I know not where I am.
You're about 4 miles out of Dodge City. Kansas.
Kansas. I would give all my fame for a pot of ale and safety.
We better get him to town quick. He's in a bad way. He's delirious.
You think you can make it on a horse? We'll take you into... We'll take him into Dodge. And he passed out again. We tied him across Doc's horse. Doc and I doubled up, and Chester rode behind. The stranger was a tall, skinny man with a face like a friendly mule. Big hands and thin wrists stretched out from his sleeves. He had no papers on him, nothing. And until he woke up, we wouldn't even know his name. Doc settled him down in the back of his place, and he was still asleep when Chester and I rode out to where we figured he'd left his wagon. Wasn't hard to see when we found it.
What color wagon would you call that, Mr. Dillon?
Puce, Chester. Puce.
I guess so. Seems to be some writing on the side there.
Yeah. O. Irving Henry, Thespian Supreme Disciple of the Immortal Bard.
I should have known he was a religious man.
He's an actor, Chester, the Immortal Bard. Shakespeare, William Shakespeare, wrote plays, poems.
You think he let the horses go, Mr. Dillon?
Well, I was wondering that. Seems to me he'd have ridden for help instead of trying to walk.
Horses couldn't have got out of the harness themselves.
Well, let's take a look at the wheel.
I wish we could wait till the sun goes down. It's going to be awful hot work, Mr. Dillon.
It's not too bad. The pin fell out. Must be another in the box at the back. Take a look, will you, Chester?
Yes, sir.
I'll prop the wheel up here. Now.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, can't you find it?
Will you come here a minute?
What's the matter?
Take a look in there.
It took a second or two to get used to the darkness inside the wagon. And then I saw the hand sticking out from behind a trunk. You didn't have to be the doc to know that it was a dead hand. The body was of a man about 40. He was dirty. And in a greasy, torn waistcoat, I found a pocketbook with his name, Sam Matchett. And that was all. Below his left shoulder and his back was a patch of dried blood. And in the middle, a bullet hole. We got the wagon wheel on, hitched up our horses, and drove into Dodge. Doc?
Oh, that's you, Marshal?
Yeah.
Yeah, be right out.
All right.
Get that fella's wagon fixed up?
Yeah, I brought it in. Is he awake?
Oh, I haven't looked in the last half hour. I was making coffee. You want some?
No, thanks.
Oh, it's a funny thing about coffee when it's hot weather like this. Drink it scalded and it makes you feel cooler outside.
Look, Doc, I got to see that fellow. I want to ask him a couple of questions.
Oh, that's so?
I found a dead man in the back of his wagon.
You don't say?
You better take a look. Chester's bringing him in the side.
Oh, sure. You want to go on back?
Yeah, thanks, Doc. Mr. Henry? Mr. Henry, wake up.
Yeah, what? Oh.
Your name, Irving Henry?
Oh, Irving Henry. What is this place?
Now, you got to listen to me for a minute. We found your wagon.
Ah?
Did you let the horses go before you set out on your own?
Of course. I could not let them remain to die.
Well, how come you didn't take one to ride?
I have a loathing of horses. I cannot bear one under my body. There is a carafe of water beside the bed. Would you be good enough, Mr.
Dillon, Matt Dillon. I'm the marshal here in Dodge City. Here you are.
Oh, my thanks.
Now, what were you doing with a dead man in your wagon, Mr. Henry?
A dead man?
A dead man shot in the back, lying in your wagon.
This is very midsummer madness.
I won't argue about that, but I'll thank you to answer my question.
But it is impossible. It isn't true.
I say it is.
You lie in your throat if you say that I'm any other than an honest man.
Look, mister, I didn't say you weren't honest. You're an actor. And you got a fine way of saying things, but murder's murder. I don't care how you say it. Now, I'm asking questions, and I want straight answers.
Your pardon, sir. What you tell me... In truth, if it were played upon a stage, I would condemn it as an improbable fiction. I swear to you, I know nothing of a body.
Did you come through Hayes City?
Yes.
Do you know a man there called Sam Matchett?
No.
You had no trouble in Hayes City?
No.
What are you doing in these parts, Mr. Henry?
I am touring the provinces. An actor... eating the bitter bread of banishment. And my talents are not taken for their worth in the East. And therefore, I bring the immortal bard to the hinterlands. And now, sir, that the interview is ended, pray give me leave to depart.
I'm sorry, I can't do that. You'll have to stay until we get this thing cleared up.
Mr. Dillon, Doc would like to see you.
All right, Chester. Stay here with Mr. Henry, will you?
Well, sure, Mr. Dillon, sure. How are you feeling by now, Mr. Henry? Would you like some more water?
These evil
manners
live in brass.
Doc.
Right here, Marshal.
Yeah.
Fill me cup, the father's boy. What was that?
What'd you find?
Well, there's one thing. This man didn't die right away. I mean, not right when he was shot.
Is that so?
No. More likely bled to death. Inside.
Uh-huh. You think he might have been able to climb up in the wagon after he was shot?
Well, he might. There's another thing.
Yeah?
You see the way he's dressed? Now, you take a look at that. What?
Dillon! Help!
Come on. Come on, Doc. Chester.
What's the matter with him?
Chester.
My gun when I was pouring him some water, Mr. Dillon.
He must have gone through the window, Marshal.
I tried to get it back. It went off.
Take care of Chester, Doc. I'm going after him.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, do you know how old the school building in your community is? If it's over 25 years old, the chances are that it's woefully inadequate to the present demands on it. Certainly, thousands of schools all over America are unable to meet the needs of a greatly increased enrollment. And all our school children will suffer unless all of us work actively to improve conditions. Join with the groups in your community working for better school conditions. Remember, better schools build a stronger America. Now, the second act of Gunsmoke. When I went out of there, I didn't know how badly Chester was hurt. There was a lot of blood on his head and over his face. It was nearly dark outside, and the street was empty. It was supper time. I could see the women through the windows getting food ready. The kids were inside, too. Sure looked peaceful. But with Henry out with a gun, well, that wasn't a good thing to have running around loose in Dodge. Thank you.
you see a man run down the street, Miss Fletcher?
Well, no.
Well, you better get inside and lock your door. Don't come out again. There's a killer loose. I walked the length of the street, listening, waiting. And when I got to the end, there was nothing. He hadn't taken a horse, I'd have heard that. And in a way, I was sorry, because if he'd tried to hide and dodge, there'd be no way to get out of shooting that wouldn't get women and kids hurt. A breeze came up and swirls of dust flew around, and then settled as the air became still and hot again. I went back to Doc's place.
Oh, did you find him, Marshal?
No. How's Chester?
Oh, I'm fine, Mr. Dillon. Just creased my head. More mess than hurt.
Oh, good, Chester. Look, you want to go home or you want to work?
I want to work.
All right. Go down to the office, get yourself another gun, and round up some men. Many as you can. As long as Henry stays in town, we're in trouble. Now, keep your eyes open. Meet me back here.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon.
Take my gun with you, and if you see him, watch out. All right, now get going.
Yes, sir.
Now, Doc, I'm going to have to make you a deputy, too.
Well, maybe instead of digging out bullets, I'll be putting some in.
It's not funny, Doc. Now, come on. All right, we'll start here. I'll take this side, you take the other. Get the men to go through their houses and tell them to look for their horses. Tell them what's happening. But 10 o'clock that night, as far as we could tell, Henry hadn't left town. There were plenty of places for him to hide, though. We had 50 men out searching. Chester and I were working along back of the express office. There were a couple of houses there we hadn't covered.
You wouldn't think a man like that would be a killer, now would you, Mr. Dillon?
I never saw a man yet couldn't be, Chester. Depends on your reasons for killing, I guess. Now, let's take a look behind these boxes.
You think he could have got this far?
Yeah, he might. A lot of back streets to sneak around in the dark. That's Miss Cullen's place there, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Looks like she's still awake. Light burning back there.
Yeah.
Seem a bit cooler to you tonight, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, a bit. Oh, evening, Miss Cullen. I'm sorry to get you up, but we're looking for a man, a stranger around. He's tall, thin. You seen anyone about tonight?
No. No, I haven't.
Huh? How's the kids?
Oh, they're fine. Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Fine.
Uh-huh. Well, you keep the place locked tight, Miss Cullen. Don't let anybody in tonight unless you know who it is.
All right. Good night, Mr. Dillon.
Good night, ma'am.
Well, now, that's strange. She didn't even say hello to me, and I know her better than you do, Mr. Dillon.
Chester, round up the others. Get them over here.
I don't know why she...
He's in there with her. I think he's got the kids in the sleeping room.
Well,
sent her out to get rid of us. Now, I'm going to try and get in. Don't do anything when you come back. Just put the men around the house.
Yes, sir.
I'd seen Miss Cullen make a move with her head. And her eyes said the rest. When I told her to lock up, I shook my head, and I hoped she understood. I wanted that front door to stay open.
Keep your promise as soon as I can.
He was in there, all right. I could hear him.
I wanted him alive, but I wasn't going to risk hurt to Miss Cullen or the kids getting him.
Please, I did what you asked. Don't hurt the children, please.
They will never know this night, but in the morning when they awake. What's that? You said you locked the door after you.
No, don't. Don't.
I shall keep the pistol turned to the girl's head, ma'am. Someone is here. They try to take me. Who is it? Who?
Mr. Dillon, go away. Please. He'll kill us.
You lied. You lied. A tiger's heart wrapped in a woman's hide. Listen to me, Marshal Dillon. Throw your pistol in here and then come in with your hands before you. I have no stomach for child killing, but I will not hesitate to do so.
Now, give me the gun, Henry.
No.
You won't be able to get out of this.
I must. There is living to be done.
You know, that fancy talk isn't going to help either. Now, why don't you climb down? What happened to Matchett?
Nothing happened to Matchett.
Why'd you kill him?
I didn't.
In 5 minutes or less, there'll be 50 men or more around here. Now, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
If you didn't kill Matchett, you'll get a chance. I'll see to that. There's no use going on this way. Give me the gun.
I cannot. It is my prop of salvation.
No gun is salvation to anybody. Put it down.
You must tell the men to go away, Marshal Dillon. I'll have to take one of these children with me for my protection.
No!
Shed a tear for me, madam. I have the greater need.
You do a lot of talking, mister. I'd like to see you turn the gun away from that kid's head. That'd take more than talk, wouldn't it, though?
I have no skill with such a weapon. Why should I match with you? I want to live.
You're going about it the wrong way.
The smallest worm will turn being trod upon.
Meaning?
You gave me no choice when you brought me here. Would have been better to have left me lying in the dust. You don't understand. You don't know.
Well, why don't you tell me?
What good would it do?
It depends.
My life has been the theater. As a boy, I was a student of Shakespeare. He would look at me. Who would accept this face for Hamlet? This ill-shaped body for Romeo? His speech has become my speech, but when the fools only look, they cannot listen for laughing.
There have been ugly men before you, and hasn't been cause for murder. Why'd you kill Matchett?
In New York, there was a man. A gross, stupid man who fancied himself an interpreter of the bard. He took me, as his apprentice. And together we set out for the tour. I would play only the voices. Never Richard. Never Henry. Never Lear. Only the voices. Whilst he, stumbling, drunken, he muddled and tore to a tatter the words that I should have spoken.
You killed a man because you wanted to play a hero?
How easily murder is discovered.
Yeah, sometimes, I guess.
It was yesterday. We were leaving Hayes City. We played there for 2 days. And it made me a laughing stock. It was night. And he became drunk and threatened to leave me in the next town. I made him stop the wagon, and taking up a pistol, I shot him. He did not die at first, and when I saw what I had done, I wanted him to live. And I put him into the wagon and I drove on, hoping to find a doctor. Then, as the night passed, I saw that he had died. And I was afraid.
The wagon broke down?
Yes. I put my purse into his clothes and took his name for mine. How I've hated the name of Sam Matchett. But you wouldn't understand.
I wouldn't? Well, what now?
I want to live. I want my chance.
You've done a murder. I can't let you go. You know that. Don't make it harder.
I lost my husband 2 years ago. I know what it is to be alone. You've been alone, haven't you? I'm sorry. But you killed someone.
We may pity, though not pardon, dear. I'm going now, Marshal.
If you walk out of there with your gun, you're a dead man.
Death's a great disguiser. I must have my chance.
Don't do it, Matchett. There'll be killing.
Madam, forgive me. I would not have harmed your children.
Matchett, put down your gun.
Let me go my way. Please.
There are a lot of men waiting for you out there, Matchett. You know what'll happen if you open the door. Don't do it, Matchett.
There's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come.
Match it. He knew he was going to die. The minute he opened that door, he knew it. And maybe he wanted to, because he fired first, a single shot. We buried him in back of the church, and I found some words in a book to put on his grave. He that dies pays all debts.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Anthony Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Hans Conried was featured as Henry, with Mary Lansing as Mrs. Cullen. Parley Bear is Chester, and Howard McNear is Doc. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Roy Rowan speaking. Remember, Gangbusters going to action Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
If the police magistrate seemed to act too hastily in the matter, he is scarcely to be blamed. For after all, if madness, even a harmless madness, did fall within his province, it was his duty to see to it that the poor afflicted person was removed to an institution. And in view of the story that Madame Blorati told him, what earthly reason could he have had to think her sane?
It was on the last day of April in the year 1907 that Madame Blorati called on the police magistrate in his office. And the magistrate had no cause to suspect that there was anything abnormal about her.
I wish to register a complaint.
Very well, madame. Against whom?
I do not know. I have never seen a person. And I have not the slightest idea who or what he is.
I see. And this unknown person?
He lives in our apartment.
In your apartment? But you never seen him?
No, never.
Oh. What, if I may ask, is your complaint against him?
He makes us walk on our hands.
He... I beg your pardon. What did you say?
I said, he makes us walk on our hands. My son, my brother.
That's what I thought you said. How does he do it?
I'm sure I do not know. All I know is that he is waiting for us in the vestibule whenever we come in. The moment we step through the doorway, he, or it, whichever it may be, forces us to bend down and put our feet in the air and walk on our hands.
But,
And I do not like it. I demand that you put a stop to it.
It was obviously a case that had been allowed to go too far already. And so he summoned Sergeant Minot and told him the sad story.
Apparently, Pierre, they are all, the whole family, stark raving mad. There is only one thing to do, I'm afraid.
Have them examined?
Precisely. And if I am correct, have them put away.
But since the magistrate was not at all certain that the Blorati family would come peacefully, he invited Sergeant Minot to accompany him to the Rue Montreuil that evening. The two men entered the apartment building just after dusk had fallen and made their way upstairs to the Blorati's door. The magistrate tested the knob gingerly.
Very locked here. It was unlocked. You wait right here. I will try to reason with them first. If that fails, if they resist, I'll call you.
Pierre, help me. Pull him off me.
Pull who, monsieur? There is no one here.
Don't try to tell me there is no one. Let go. Let go, I say.
Monsieur, why you lie down on the floor like that?
He is forcing me down. Get him off, I tell you.
But I see no one. There is only you and I, monsieur. Monsieur, mon Dieu, do you realize what you're doing? You're walking on your hands.
And so the Blorati family was neither apprehended, nor examined, nor put away. In the report which was filed by the magistrate of the Saint-Marguerite district, the only recommendation was that the apartment be disinfected because of the presence of some unknown malady. But no disinfectant could be found that was potent enough to destroy what was apparently not a malady, but a force. A supernormal force. A force incredible but true.
The Columbia Workshop is on the air.
presenting radio's foremost laboratory of new writing and production techniques. Today's program is called Slim. It is the work of John Haywood Lovelace. The musical score was specially written and is being conducted by Gail Kubik. Slim is produced and directed by Howard G. Barnes. The Columbia Workshop presents Slim.
He came from over the horizon and stood strangely against the sky, like a cloud, a rain cloud lost from the storm. Yes, he was like a lonely cloud, seeking to shed a blessing of rain on some withered root, seeking to shade a slender blade of green grass from the severe sun. It was in September, early September, before the fall frosts had spread their chill across the California mountains. Unpicked grapes had shriveled on the vine and hung dry in the soft breeze. It seemed funny as I stood there and picked a handful. It was the only thing I had to eat all day. I left San Francisco early that morning and headed east. Hitchhiking was bad, and it wasn't until evening that I reached Colfax at the base of the Sierra Nevada range. The afterglow of the sunset made the sky overhead a dull, lingering red. The surrounding mountains were black monsters silhouetted against the coming night. Lights began to flicker on in many of the houses, and in the distance, I could hear the wheeze of locomotives in the railroad yards. I made my way across the maze of silver rails and boxcars until I stood near a warehouse. I dropped my pack on the platform and sat down to ease my weary legs.
Going over?
Huh?
Going over the Great Divide?
Gee, I must have fallen asleep. I didn't hear you. Yeah, I'm going.
Well, look like you've been traveling.
Yeah, trying to hitchhike east, but the going isn't so good.
Never ride in automobiles myself. Stick to trains. Always sure where you're going.
Well, sit down.
Oh, thanks, kid.
When is the next train going over?
Oh, around 9 o'clock.
I don't have a watch.
Never worry about the time, kid. There's plenty of that. I'd say it's about 8.
Well, how do you know?
Oh, I just look at the stars. They're never wrong.
The stars?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I looked at the man beside me. Even though it was dark, I could see the gaunt features of his face. His cheekbones punched a tight skin. And there was a light in the hollowness of his eyes that reminded me of the last glowing coals of a warm fire. His hair was long from lack of care and stained from being washed in smoke. Smoke of 1,000 freight trains. He shifted and looked across the yards at a signal light, and I heard the tolling of a church bell. I remembered then that the day was Sunday. Evening services were about to begin, and the bell was ringing out the time. 6, 7, 8. It was 8 o'clock. The figure beside me was dark against the dark.
There's a bit of a chill in the air tonight.
Are you going over?
Yep, I'll be on that train.
Where do you catch it?
This your first time, ain't it, kid?
That's right.
Well, you just stick with me. We'll make it.
I've never ridden on a freight before.
It's not so bad. Maybe a little cold up in the mountains.
Say, I just remembered. I have some sugared figs in my pack. Do you want some?
No, thanks. Don't seem to be hungry right now.
I got them in Frisco this morning before I left. Been saving them.
You go ahead and eat. Don't mind me.
Well, you can have some if you want them.
Had a set down last night. Never ate so much in my life.
Well, yes, but that was last night.
One regular meal about every 2 days, my limit.
By the way, I guess we might as well introduce ourselves. My name is...
Names aren't important, kid. It's what you are that counts.
Well, yeah, but if we're going to...
I've found that some of the best names are on the worst kind of people. Some of the best people have no name. So I'll just call you Kid, all right?
And what'll I call you?
Folks call me Slim.
Well, glad to know you, Slim. Where are you from?
Oh, I ain't from no place in particular. Got a recollection of some sunsets. Been around a number of watering holes. I can't tell you just where.
Have you traveled much?
I've seen a lot in my day. Some pretty, some not so pretty. Saw a kid fall off the rods. Watched a dame knife a bow for a dime. Best jail I ever was in was in Key West. But you stay away from the chain gang states. The rats won't even live in them holes.
Yeah, the cops picked me up in Los Angeles.
Don't get me wrong, I ain't kicking. Been around quite a bit, some of it not so pretty, but I ain't beefing. Yeah, have worn denim so long that the stink in them would make a skunk fade. Had cinders so thick in my hair I couldn't comb it. And I've been so hungry that my stomach wrapped itself around my spine. Yeah, I've been around quite a bit.
I'm from Chicago myself.
Yeah? Ridden many a hot shot to try. Drags in the panhandle. Picked up a lot of loose change in D.C. Stood in plenty of soup.
Hey, they must be making a train.
Yeah, that's ours. They put on about 100 cars before they highball. Might as well walk over that way, kid. Hey, don't forget your pack.
He turned as he spoke and motioned for me to follow. There was experience in his walk as he made his way through the shadows. Once or twice, he seemed to disappear. And then I discovered that he was just ahead of me. My nervousness at the idea of riding a freight train became less as I followed him.
She'll be pulling out soon. They're waiting for the pusher.
Pusher?
Mm-hmm. They put a locomotive on behind to help push her up the grade. They're taking out the slack. Careful, don't get out in the light. Might be a railroad detective around. We'll catch it on the right side, kid. No danger of falling between the cars if you miss.
Well, aren't we going to ride inside?
This is a fruit train. All them cars sealed tighter than tombs. I must be having trouble with the brakes. Quiet, kid. Here comes someone. Just a brakeman. It's the highball.
Well, aren't we going to get on?
Nope. Let her roll before we flip her, kid. Take your time. Don't hurry.
When?
Not yet. Now, kid. Run alongside. Yeah, that's it. Grab the ladder. Get a grip. All right. Jump.
Come on, Slim. Get aboard. You'll miss it.
All right, kid. All right.
Slim! Slim! There was no answer to my call. Suddenly, I realized that I was hanging on the side of a speeding train. Fearfully, I climbed the iron ladder, my shoes scraping on the car and the wind tearing at my hair. I pulled myself over the edge and lay flat on the catwalk, breathing heavily from an unknown fear. What had happened to Slim?
Well, that wasn't bad.
Slim.
For a beginner, you got real talent.
But I thought you...
Nope. Here I am. That breeze feels nice. Smell that smoke? That's oil. No coal burners on this run.
Slim stood tall against the wind, his shirt front slapping his stomach, and the tattered legs of his pants billowing like balloons. There was a smile on his lips as he watched the black smoke of the lead engine swirl into the night air.
Sorry if I scared you, kid. There's no use getting on too close to the front engine. If you do, you eat smoke instead of watching.
It is pretty, isn't it?
Yeah. man-made clouds.
And blacker than the night.
Riding tops isn't the best thing in the world, but you sure do get to see the scenery.
Do you always ride tops?
Mm-hmm. Most of the time. I've ridden on flatties and in reefers. Like I say, you can see more from on deck.
Well, I guess maybe I'm green, but what's a reefer?
Yeah, that's what we're riding on, a refrigerator car. When they don't put ice in them, you can ride in the ice compartment.
Yeah, speaking of ice, that wind is getting colder.
Yeah, we're starting up the canyon. Oh, that's the lead engine. Everything okay. That's the pusher.
How high do we go?
Oh, about a mile. Better break out that blanket of yours.
Yeah, I guess it will help.
Look to the east, kid.
Yeah?
Now, watch after we're around this curve.
It's the moon.
Frozen to the top of the Sierras, and a sky full of stars.
Say, this blanket does help. Come on, sit down here and you can share it.
No thanks, kid.
But you've only got on a shirt over your skin.
It ain't cold anymore.
Well, I certainly can feel it.
Now, you just wrap up and sit there, and I'll go up front and see if there's an empty.
Okay, Slim. Hurry back. Be careful.
All right, kid. All right.
He leaned into the wind and started walking toward the front of the long train. I watched his specter-like body grow fainter and fainter. For long moments I waited, my body quivering with its first chill. I drew the blanket tight about me and looked once again in the direction Slim had gone. Someone was coming along the catwalk through the darkness. He came closer. Slim! Slim, did you find it?
What's that?
Did you find the empty?
No empties on this train, Bo.
Oh, I thought you were Slim.
Oh, just the brakeman. It's a cold night to be riding on top. Why did you wait till tomorrow?
Well, I...
The way things look, it's going to be below freezing by the time we reach the top of the range.
I've got a blanket.
Well, you'll need it, and then some. Hey, you must be in an awful hurry to make this trip tonight. Where are you going?
Chicago.
Well, you still got a long way to go. Tell you what you might do. Try taking the spur line at Borie, Wyoming. Get off at LaSalle Junction, Colorado, and catch a hotshot cattle train from Denver. That'll get you home in 31 hours.
Where did you say?
Borie. That's just west of Cheyenne. Still a long ride. Well, gotta check on things. Say, you seem to be the only hobo on this train. I guess the cold scared most of them off.
But Slim is up front someplace.
Slim?
Yeah, the fellow I'm traveling with.
On this train?
He went that way to see if he could find an empty.
Oh, there ain't anyone on this train besides you. Not up front, anyway. No empties, either.
But he just went that way a little while ago.
I didn't meet anyone. Didn't see anybody. Are you sure?
He's a tall fellow.
Well, if he did go up that way, he's not there now. Might have fallen off. Rough trip. Take it easy, Bo.
I sat there, stunned. Fallen off? Oh, no, Slim couldn't have. Slim knew the ropes. The air was becoming colder. The moon had risen higher over the mountains, and its crescent spread a pale light through the canyon. I looked over the side of the car, and then I pulled back in fear. The train was now creeping along the edge of a jagged cliff. A river lay far below.
That's the American River, kid.
Slim!
Looks like a silver ribbon down there.
But the brakeman
said... Didn't find any empties, but there's a car up ahead that's not as high as these regular reefers. We can lay on it and let the front car buck the wind.
Oh, yeah. The brakeman said it was really going to get cold.
I've seen it colder.
Say, where were you when he passed? He said he didn't see anyone.
The smoke was kind of thick.
He really scared me. He said you probably fell off.
No, not me.
We must be climbing.
We'll be hitting the snow shed soon. Getting high.
The air seems as clear as crystal.
Well, let's go, kid.
Where?
That car up front. Now, don't mind the moving train. You'll be all right.
Yeah, but I might fall.
No, you won't. Just follow me.
Well, wait till I roll this blanket.
Make sure what you're going to do, then do it.
All right, I'm ready. Lead the way.
Take your time.
Let's go.
Just lean into the wind.
Right.
On your face, kid.
What?
Fall flat. Down, kid, down.
What do you mean?
On top of the car before it's too late. You're all right, kid.
What happened? Everything went black.
That was the first tunnel. Whew.
That was close.
Just keep your eyes ahead. Ready?
Ready.
Follow me, then. Just step over, kid. Don't look down between the cars.
But the cars are swaying too much, Slim.
Get set, and then leap.
I watched him as he seemed to float over the break between the cars. At the end of the catwalk, I crouched tensely, with the wind seeking to push me backward. Slim walked on without looking around. 8, 9, 10 times I leaped across the gaping jaws between the cars, each time gaining more courage. I looked up and called out, "Slim! Slim, it's another tunnel!" He turned and waved as he did before. He was still standing when the train plunged into the smoke-filled shaft. I sprawled across the top of the car. Slowly, I rose to my feet as I rubbed away the burn of the smoke from my eyes.
It's the next car, kid.
I rubbed my eyes again. Slim seemed to be drifting with a clinging smoke.
Yeah, it gets mighty stuffy in a tunnel.
He motioned me forward to the end of the car.
This is it. It's about a foot and a half lower.
We jumped down and walked to the front. The wind wasn't as strong there, and I laid down along the catwalk. Slim stood tall and refused to listen to my plea to get down out of the cold wind. His answer was always the same.
It ain't cold.
Time and again, I puzzled over his words. Even though I was dressed warmly and wrapped in a blanket, I shivered with a heavy chill. It was cold. Yet Slim never complained.
Snowshed ahead.
Where?
Along that curve over there.
I looked in the direction he pointed. There in the half-light of the moon, a long shed straddled the twisting track like a thick snake, a hollow monster which protected the winding rails from drifting snows. Nearer and nearer it came, until finally the engine rushed into the funnel, and one by one the cars followed. Our car came next.
We'll be stopping soon, kid.
Where are we?
Almost on top.
Oh, I hope it doesn't get any colder.
There ain't no heat in the moon at midnight.
That ain't pretty anymore, either.
Looks like a curved piece of cold steel.
Another tunnel ahead.
Yep. Swallowed by a mountain. Keep down, kid.
You better get down. It's just ahead.
Don't worry, kid. I'm all right. All right.
There were three more tunnels and two snowsheds. Each time, my body would yield to the warm air about me, and then the train would shoot out onto the frost of the mountainside. I'd see Slim still standing with the wind tugging at his clothes. His hair fought with the cross currents of cold until it became matted.
Lights ahead, kid. We're coming in.
The top of the divide, huh?
Uh-huh. We can pile off up here.
I sure hope there's some heat.
There's a roundhouse.
I don't know if I can move or not. I'm so cold.
Better stand up and move around a little bit.
Yeah, that should help. Oh, am I stiff.
Now, watch it when we pull into the yards. Keep down and stay out of the light.
When do we get off?
Let us stop first. Okay, kid. Careful now.
Oh, my legs.
This way, into the shadows. Over here is a door into the roundhouse. Wait. Flatten yourself against the wall. Someone's coming. Okay, now. Open the door and get inside.
Okay.
There's a boiler over there, kid. That means heat. Now be quiet. We can stand near that pile of sand.
What's the sand for, Slim?
To make the wheels grab for starting on slippery tracks.
Oh, say, does this heat feel good?
Quiet, kid. Gotta be careful in here.
Yeah. Boy, I couldn't have taken much more cold.
Well, better be getting back, kid.
Oh, Slim, I'm just beginning to get warm.
Well, that freight'll highball soon.
I sure hate to leave.
Come on. Stay in the shadows. Wait. He's gone. Come on. Outside, quick. She's highballing. That's our car over there.
Got it. Come on, Slim.
All right, kid. All right. It's downgrade from here to Reno.
Any more tunnels?
Yep, one long one. And it's a bad one.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than those others.
A lot of loose rock in this tunnel.
Hey, Slim. We're slowing down again.
Yeah. Streamliner almost due. They're clearing the switch. We're on the siding.
Yeah, I think it's colder.
It's a morning moon.
Hey, what's that sound? That moon.
It's a streamliner. Right on time.
Coming fast.
Lie flat, kid. Should throw cinders and dirt.
She sure did raise a dust.
Huh? She'll be in Reno at 5 this morning.
Oh, that's the way to travel.
Too fast, kid. You never see anything.
Well, it ain't a cold way to ride.
No, it ain't cold.
And it ain't a hungry way either.
But I like this better. You see more.
Slim was strangely quiet after the streamliner had passed.
The expectation that had been in his face as the train climbed the western slope was gone. He didn't speak until minutes later as the train began to twist around a curve.
This is the one, kid.
The train sped into the long tube, and I put my head down on my arm. The feeling of being buried alive seized me, and as I screamed against the roar, I gagged on the warm cloud around me. Suddenly, above the sound of the speeding train, I heard a crash. Something dropped in the car ahead and bounced over me. It careened along the catwalk and then dropped over the side. Once again, we were in the clear, cold night. I looked up and saw Slim standing as he had been before. He looked ahead.
He never prayed in my life.
Slim, what was it?
A rock fell on the car ahead.
I looked to where he pointed and saw a dent on the roof of the next boxcar. And the catwalk beside me was splintered.
They never prayed out loud.
What's that smell?
Hot iron. The brakes are beginning to smoke.
How long before the next stop?
Oh, soon. They check for hot boxes. Brakes get red hot going downgrade into Truck E.
Well, I can't stand this cold much longer.
We'll get off there.
I don't remember much coming down into Truck E. The train stopped several times to check the brakes, and the moon began to disappear in the west. I lay like a shivering puppy and hoped. And all the time, Slim was there near me. Yet he too seemed to drift like the smoke trail of the train. He talked less and appeared to be in deep thought. The same warmness I'd seen in his eyes before came back once in a while. It was the fire of life. But it didn't linger long, and the lines of his face were softer now. He stood up and shook the smoke from my clothes.
We're almost there, kid.
My hands are numb.
You'll be all right.
I can just get warm.
They're pulling in.
Now, what time is it?
3:30.
3:30.
It ain't cold anymore. Careful, kid.
I lost my grip halfway down the ladder and fell with a thud on the gravel right away.
Painfully, I got to my feet and started to follow Slim across the yards.
The many signal lights confused me and my feet stumbled. I rubbed my eyes and approached a double set of tracks. Slim had already crossed the first tracks when he turned quickly and yelled,
"Wait, kid! Wait! Watch out! Watch out!"
An engine rushed by me, its escaping steam licking at my legs with a warm white tongue. I felt weak all over. If Slim hadn't called, I would have stepped in front of the locomotive. Quickly, I glanced both ways and hurried across the tracks to where Slim had been standing. I called out, "Slim! Slim!" There was no answer. He was gone. A yardman walked nearby, his lantern swinging in a brilliant white arc. "Hey, mister! Mister!"
"Yeah? What do you want?"
"Which way did that fella go?"
"What fella?"
"Why, the one who was standing here when that engine passed."
"I didn't see anybody."
"Why, you must have seen him around here."
"What was he, a hobo?"
"Yeah, that's right."
"Yeah, a lot of bows around."
"He was a tall, slim fella."
"Slim fella, huh?"
"He was wearing a white shirt."
"And a pair of ragged pants and no socks?"
"Yeah. Yeah, that's the fella."
"Was his hair kind of all twisted up, like maybe the wind had blown it?"
"Yeah, have you seen him?"
"Yeah, I've seen him."
"Where?"
"Why, over at the warehouse."
"In the warehouse? Thanks."
"Wait a minute there, son."
"Yeah?"
"Aren't you kind of mixed up?"
"Mixed up?
Where'd you come from?"
"Why, I came over the range tonight with Slim."
"You mean the tall fellow?"
"That's right. You're sure he's up at the warehouse?"
"Yes, son. I've seen him there, and so have a lot of other people in the last 50 years. Some see him at Colfax, or maybe at Blue Canyon, or in Truckee. You see, Slim comes over the Great Divide every night. Whenever a hobo rides the freight, Slim rides with him to see that he makes it okay. Maybe he's real, maybe he ain't."
"You mean that Slim..."
"Can't say, son. But if you rode in on the 330, you rode in with Slim."
You have just heard the Columbia Workshop production of Slim by John Haywood Lovelace. The musical score was composed and conducted by Gail Kubik. The cast was as follows. Elliot Reed played the kid, Robert Dryden appeared as Slim, and Raymond Van Sickle was the railroad yardmaster. Howard G. Barnes produced and directed Slim for the Columbia Workshop. Next week, the Columbia Workshop will present an original script by Bruce Stouderman entitled Thanks for the Memories, and Guy Della Chapa will direct. Your announcer is Sandy Becker for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's going to do it for the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections. We'll be back next Tuesday with something from Box 13 and Favorite Story. In the meantime, you can find more stories at relicradio.com, along with links to past episodes, links to our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream. Everything Relic Radio is at relicradio.com. Don't forget, if you'd like to help support this and all the Relic Radio shows, click on the donate button. Appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thank you to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back Tuesday with another hour of old-time radio on the Relic Radio Show.